This is Leech, a Stranger Things fanfic written by Aktora and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13 and is gen, with additional tags for pre-canon, morally gray Steve Harrington, experiment Steve Harrington. Steve Harrington has powers. Behold my poor attempt at psychological horror. Summary has been updated because I didn't like the first one. Morally ambiguous character. Summary. In which Steve makes himself a home. Author's notes. So this is my half-baked attempt at reconciling the idea of experiment Steve with his canonical parents. Hope you enjoy. The child comes to her in early March, shortly after Richard leaves on his extended business trip to New York. Ariadne is set to join him the next day, and as such, she's in the process of readying the house for their absence, covering the furniture with sheets to protect against dust, disconnecting the electrical appliances, emptying the refrigerator of perishables. When the doorbell rings. She's not expecting anyone, and the hour is growing late. So when she goes to answer the door, she is surprised to find a young child standing on her doorstep, shivering in the cold. Its head is shaved, and its feet are bare, and it's wearing what looks like a thin hospital gown and little else. It must have come through the forest and circled back around the house, she thinks, because it's wet and muddy and there are leaves stuck to the bottom of its gown. Oh! She says, and the child, who can't be more than 7 or maybe 8 years old, looks up at her as blood starts to drip from its nose. Ariadne's vision flashes white as her legs give way beneath her. She slumps against the doorframe, eyes pinned to the child as she slides down to sit on the floor, and it watches her fall, never breaking eye contact. There's a sharp ache forming at the back of her head, like the beginnings of a migraine that starts out merely disagreeable, but ends up turning absolutely debilitating. And she finds herself mutely reaching for the child, opening her arms and welcoming it into her lap, cradling it against her chest as it tracks mud and water into the house and onto her clothes. It's small and thin, trembling in the cold draft coming through the still open doorway. And Ariadne shushes it, running a hand over its head before resting her fingers against its nape. She's never wanted or needed a child. This morning when she woke up, she did not have one. Yet she knows with absolute certainty that this child is her son. Her resolve weakens once she gets the child inside and into a hot bath. She stands in the upstairs hallway and can't find her son's room. Surely he must have a room. Where do they keep his clothes and his toys? Where does he sleep? She spends 10 minutes looking, but there is only the master bedroom that she and Richard share, and a handful of guest bedrooms. She ends up having to go into Richard's closet to pick out a pair of underwear and a sweater for their child, just something for him to wear until she can buy him some clothes, and it makes her burn with shame as she makes her way back to the bathroom. What kind of mother is she thinks, that she has failed to provide for even the most basic of her son's needs? She places the clothes on the bathroom counter, and when she turns to the bathtub, she finds that the boy is silently watching her. For a moment, she is pinned in place by his gaze. But then his nose starts to bleed again, and Ariadne feels herself jerk into motion, stumbling over to the tub and falling down onto her knees on the floor. Her body aches from the impact, and she can feel water seep into the fabric of her skirt from the small puddle that has splashed over the edge of the tub and onto the tiles. But she can't bring herself to care as she reaches out to gently wipe away the blood now dripping down the child's chin. He won't stop looking at her. His eyes are large and dark. Nothing like Richard's blue or her own green. And she finds herself unable to break the contact as he wraps his fingers around her wrist. Small and thin, yet so, so strong. And slowly lowers her hand from his face. Then he glances down, and she does the same. And he turns his wrist to show her the number inked onto his skin. There's a longing building in strength in the back of her mind. It's a fierce, foreign yearning that spikes as she carefully runs her thumb over the number, like it's a spot of dirt that can simply be wiped off. Oh, baby, she sighs. We'll have to get this removed. Richard calls her later that night from his hotel room to check in on her, just like he always does. Oh, Ariadne tells him, I won't be able to come to New York after all. Who will look after Stephen? Richard is very quiet for a moment. Stephen? He finally asks. Ariadne smiles and reaches down to run her hand over Stephen's head. He's standing next to her, gripping the fabric of her skirt tightly in one hand, and Richard's sweater is so large on his small frame that he appears to be drowning in it. He's been watching her intently ever since she answered the phone. It's a good name they chose, she thinks. Stephen. Richard's grandfather's name was Stephen. Ariadne? Richard's saying, and she laughs. Stephen, silly, she says, as if he needs the reminder. Our son? Richard always gets so caught up in his business deals that sometimes she thinks he'd forget his own head if it wasn't attached to his shoulders. Honey, he says, and he sounds out of sorts. Ariadne had felt the same way when she realized she'd forgotten something as important as their child. Is someone there with you? It's only Stephen and me, she says. Oh, Richard, we forgot to buy him clothes. I don't know how this happened. I gave him your sweater, but it's simply too large on him. Ariadne, Richard is saying, I'm coming back home. I want you to hang up and call the police. Ask if an officer can stay with you until I get back. Do you understand? Don't be silly. We'll be fine. She tucks the receiver against her shoulder and opens the fridge, frowning as she remembers emptying it earlier that day. I'm going to make Stephen some supper. Hang up and call the police, Richard insists. I'm going to call the airline and get the first flight out. He disconnects the call, and Ariadne closes the fridge door and walks over to hang up the phone. Her hand lingers on the receiver for a moment as she tries to remember what it was Richard wanted her to do. But then there's a tug at her skirt, and she looks down to see Stephen peering up at her. She smiles, leaning down to cup his face in her hands. Your father's coming home, she says. He's missed you so, so much. Now, How about we order a pizza? Stephen looks up at her with those large, dark eyes. And then, after a moment, he smiles. She can't very well let Stephen out of the house wearing nothing but his father's sweater. So after a moment of hesitation, she leaves him on the couch in front of the television and heads out on a quick trip to buy him some necessities. Later, she decides, she'll take him to Indianapolis and buy him a complete wardrobe and all the toys he wants. There's only one clothing store in downtown Hawkins, but Ariadne thinks it'll do for now. Once inside, however, she finds herself at somewhat of a loss because she can't seem to remember Stephen's size. In fact, she can't remember ever buying anything for him, not even baby clothes. And the shame wells up in her again, burning in its familiarity. She heads to the boys' section and grabs a pair of jeans and a sweater, spreading them out on top of the display as she tries to determine if they're the correct size or not. Ariadne? A voice says. And Ariadne turns to find herself face to face with Joyce Byers, the woman who works the counter at Melville's. She's carrying a toddler on her hip, and her oldest son is tucked up against her side, shyly hiding behind his mother as he peers up at her. Oh, hello, Ariadne says. It still strikes her as strange, the way certain people in small towns like Hawkins feel the right to call others by their given name, even if they're nothing more than acquaintances. Joyce smiles, and then her eyes flick over to the clothes Ariadne was contemplating before she was interrupted. Stephen's home, Ariadne finds herself saying. Oh, Stephen? Is that... He is my son. Joyce looks surprised. I didn't know you and Richard had any children. He's... Ariadne falters, feeling something clawing at the back of her mind. Something important. But she can't seem to... He's been staying with my sister until we got settled, she says. Because that must be it. Joyce smiles again. Well, you must be happy to have him home finally, she says. And thankfully doesn't bring up the fact that Ariadne and Richard have been living happily settled in Hawkins going on 3 years now. God, what must she think of them? Ariadne's eyes fall to Joyce's oldest. I'm sorry, she says, but my Stephen's roughly the same size. Would you mind if I... Not at all. Jonathan, hold still for Mrs. Harrington, will you? Jonathan squirms as Ariadne holds up the clothes against him, checking his size. Turns out she wasn't too far off. Richard arrives later that afternoon. He embraces Ariadne when she opens the door, like he's relieved to see her. Are you all right? He says, stepping back to give her a once-over, his hands resting on her arms. She laughs. Now that you're home? Of course. Richard gives a sigh of relief and nods, giving her another kiss before bending down to pick up his suitcase. Is the officer still here? There's no car out front. Oh, there was no need to call anyone, Ariadne says, closing the door behind him as he steps inside. Now come, Stephen's missed you. Richard visibly stiffens. Where is he? He says, setting down his suitcase by the base of the stairs. He's in by the television, Ariadne answers. And Richard doesn't bother taking off his coat or his shoes before he's on the move. She hurries after, nearly running into the back of him as he stops dead in the doorway to the living room. When she peeks over his shoulder, she can see him staring at Stephen. Their son is wearing the new clothes she got him and is curled up in one of the armchairs, intently watching Tom chase Jerry across the television screen. "Good God," Richard says. "Ariadne, where did you find him?" Ariadne lightly whacks him on the shoulder. "Stop being silly," she says, as Stephen turns to look at them. "Baby, your father's home." Stephen climbs out of the armchair, and Richard shudders, grunting as if in pain as he reaches out to grip the doorframe. "Oh!" Ariadne reaches out for him as he begins to sink down onto the floor. But he's taller and heavier than she is, and there's not much she can do to slow his fall. Stephen quietly pads over to them, his footsteps nearly silent in the face of Richard's jagged breathing. And Richard seems frozen in place, unable to look away from their son. Ariadne understands. He's a beautiful child. Finally, after maybe a minute or two, Richard reaches out a shaking hand, and Stephen steps closer, allowing his father to clasp his shoulder. "Stephen," Richard says, almost like it's a question, and Ariadne reaches into the pocket of his coat and fishes out the handkerchief she'd slipped inside before he left. She carefully uses it to wipe the blood off Stephen's upper lip. Ariadne stays at home and looks after Stephen when Richard leaves on his business trips. She buys their son clothes and toys and lets him claim one of the upstairs guest rooms as his own, helping him decorate it to his tastes. She takes him to a specialist to get rid of that awful tattoo, cooks for him, reads to him before bed, and yet it still feels like very little in the face of all of the neglect they've shown him up until now. "She should be better than this," she thinks. It makes her feel sick how indifferent she sometimes still feels toward her child. Like there's no bond between them at all, except for the invisible shackle of motherhood that keeps her at the house. She has dreams where she leaves Stephen behind and jets off to join Richard in New York or London or Paris, and then she wakes up and weeps. Partly because she shouldn't be wishing for such things, and partly because she finds herself still in Hawkins. The guilt is crushing at times. She can't seem to remember any of the important milestones in Stephen's life. Can't remember expecting him, or even giving birth to him. Can't recall his first word or his first steps. And when she tries to enroll him in school for the fall semester, she discovers that she has somehow managed to lose his birth certificate. Or perhaps she and Richard never registered for one in the first place. Thankfully, money talks, and Richard is able to grease enough palms to right most of the wrongs they've made so far. Ariadne hires a private tutor out of New York, who stays with them over the summer, and helps Stephen catch up on everything he'll need to know before entering second grade. And he sucks up the knowledge like a sponge. If Richard were here to see it, he would be proud, she thinks. He still calls her every evening he's away. But the longer that is, the more reluctant he seems to be to speak to Stephen on the phone. He tries to convince Ariadne to join him on his trips, to hire a live-in nanny and leave Stephen behind. But Ariadne glances over at the kitchen table where Stephen's doing his coloring and finds him looking back at her with those dark eyes, like he knows what they're thinking. So she tells Richard no. She puts her foot down and demands that he comes home instead. And he does, appearing slightly breathless when Stephen greets him by the door. Perhaps he's forgotten how much he cares for their child. Ariadne doesn't know how that would feel. She's never been away from Stephen for more than a few hours since he came back into their lives. Richard locks himself in his study when he's home. He avoids spending much time with Stephen. Even at the dinner table, he seems to avoid looking at him. And it causes a lot of fights. Ariadne is almost certain that they never used to fight like this. Perhaps that's what parenthood does to people. It makes them reconsider their priorities. Richard wants to send Stephen to boarding school, wants to leave him behind with the help, wants Ariadne to forget about the years they've already spent without him. She'll ask him why, and he'll rub at his temples and frown as if he's in pain as he tries to explain his reasoning, why he feels the way he does, but he can never seem to put it into words. Ariadne also wants many things. She wants her freedom back, but she feels shame for even thinking as much. She wants to be rid of the guilt of all that she's forgotten when it comes to Stephen. She wants to be a good mother to the child she doesn't think she ever wanted, but who she must have chosen to bring into the world anyway. He loves you, she reassures Stephen, after one of her and Richard's fights. Just like I love you, very, very much. Stephen glances at the closed door of Richard's study, and then looks back at her. I know you do, he says, like he can tell that she's lying. Life goes on. Richard leaves and comes back. Ariadne stays. They fight about it less and less, but Ariadne can still see the ever-present silent question in Richard's eyes each time he packs his suitcase for another trip. She tells him no when she wants to say yes, and kisses him farewell by the door as Stephen watches from the top of the staircase. One morning, after Richard's excused himself from the breakfast table and left them in favor of locking himself into his office, Stephen sets his fork down and looks at her. I think I'm ready now, he says. You can go. He's 12 now, and growing taller by the day. He's a beautiful boy, and Ariadne thinks he'll turn out to be a very handsome man, too, once he grows up. It strikes her as funny sometimes how genetics work. With his dark eyes and thick brown hair, Stephen doesn't look anything like either her or Richard. You should go with him, Stephen's saying, and the look in his eyes is intent. He wipes at his nose. You don't know what he does when you're not there. How can you trust him? Ariadne sets her cup down on the table, and the coffee sloshes over the rim onto her fingers. She barely feels it. He's right, she realizes. It's never occurred to her before, but Stephen's right. She can't trust Richard. He's gone for months on end while she stays behind in Hawkins, and who knows what he does when he's away? Who he talks to, or who he... I'll be fine, Stephen tells her. You set up that account for me, and Dad pays the bills each month. Send me a weekly allowance, and you can go. Ariadne swallows, feeling a thrill shoot up her spine. To be able to go seems like a far-off wish. She still dreams of leaving sometimes. I need you to come back every few months or so, though, Stephen says. It's been long enough now that that's all I'll need. Of course, darling, Ariadne says. She pushes her chair back and stands up, absentmindedly wiping her fingers on the front of her bathrobe. not caring that the coffee is staining the cream terry cloth. I'll go tell your father. She leaves Stephen to enjoy the rest of his breakfast alone. Their flight home is delayed. They end up finding a table in the first-class lounge and sit in silence as they look out at the runway and beyond, at the trees and the mountains in the distance, cutting across the clear blue sky. It's a beautiful day, and Ariadne reaches out across the table to take Richard's hand in hers. When he doesn't pull away, she intertwines their fingers, feeling his wedding band catch against her own. It's been good, these 2 months they've been traveling together. She feels better now that she's by his side and able to keep an eye on him. So far, he hasn't strayed, hasn't even looked at another woman twice, but who knows how long he'll be able to keep himself in check. It might be different next time, or the time after that. She rubs her thumb against the side of his hand as an announcement goes out over the loudspeakers. Their flight to Indianapolis won't leave for another 2 hours, and she can hear Richard sigh, like he's pained by the reminder of home. A sudden, sharp ache cuts through her own head, and she flinches, touching her fingers to her temple and feeling the beginning of a headache start to form. It's peculiar how something inside her longs to go home, but at the same time, there's a strange kind of dread pooling at the bottom of her stomach at the thought of returning to Hawkins again. Of returning to the house. She suspects that Richard feels the same way. That's why he keeps traveling, even though she knows he could delegate the task to someone else. And she wonders, distantly, if he feels it too. This yearning inside that stretches thinner and thinner, like a rubber band threatening to snap the longer she stays away. That only seems to spring back into place and ease when she steps through the door and lays eyes on Stephen. For some reason, she can't seem to find the right words with which to ask. The end. Reader's notes. So, A, this was recorded on the couch in my dad's living room over Memorial Day weekend 2023, and I didn't realize until about 8 minutes in that all of the windows are open, which means you've definitely got birds from the birds outside, and you possibly have drums from the kid next door who got a drum kit for his birthday and won't shut the fuck up. I'm very happy for his musical career, but also, fuck. I forgot to check my surroundings, and now I know there's definitely background noise. But you know what? We would call it an artifact of the recording experience. And B, I was talking to my roommate about Steve with Powers, and we spent like a solid 40 minutes over the dinner table the other night going through some of our favorite Steve with Powers, Steve as a number. How do you make it so that he is both traumatized and also high school dipshit jock asshole? And this is really good for me. This one's a creepy level of powers, and kind of like Steve has the powers that season 4 general guy thinks Elle has about making you want to do things. And it's really good for me. And it's like, okay, yes, this is sort of a protective thing because a child wants a place to be, but also by the time he gets to be the Steve that we see in season 1, he's been doing the manipulating thing for years, so the implications of this AU are just so good. Anyway, if you have any Steva's powers, Steva the number, Ficrex, and you want to drop them my way, I'd be more than happy to read them. Thank you, Toctora, for having blanket permission to Podfic. I am glad to contribute just a little drip more to the Steva powers pool, because this shit is good. Creepy and good. So yes, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day. Second reader's notes. Okay, usually I'm just like, I'm done, I've moved on with my life, I've moved on. However, this podfic, I have been sitting on it for over a month because I was like, I need music with this. For some reason, it was screaming it needed music. And A, I wanted something era-appropriate 1980s-y because, I just can't do a modern song with a Stranger Things fic, I don't know. But the other thing I wanted was like, twinkly, creepy music box, childhood trauma, scary movie kind of vibes. And then we were in the car and Take Me Home Tonight by Eddie Money came out. And I'm like, oh my God, it's perfect. Tonally, it's shit. But the lyrics, there's a bit in the middle that goes, I get frightened in all this darkness. I get nightmares. I hate to sleep alone. I need some company, a guardian angel. And then literally, take me home tonight. I don't want to let you go till you see the light. Take me home. I don't want to let you go. I'm sorry, but that screams tiny, traumatized baby Steve who wants to make himself a home. But also I wanted the really, you know, creepy, twinkly music box vibes. So, after looking up the nightcore version, the acoustic version, the country western version of Take Me Home Tonight, none of which were what I wanted, I found the Take Me Home Tonight lullaby version, but also, Take me home tonight, I don't wanna let you go till you see the light. I don't know, it's just so good for Steve in this. So, yeah, shout out to finally, that beautiful feeling of finally finding the perfect music. Once again, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.